So I've got a question for you as we get started. If you're ready to put on your thinking hats from the word go. The question is this: what is the single biggest predictor of a person's overall quality of life? So that's the question. What's the single biggest predictor of your quality of life? Is it A, your finances? So your financial status, your stability, how much money you have in the bank? Is it B, your job, where you work, the meaning that you find through your employment? Is it C, where you live, the home you live in, the neighborhood you live in, the climate and how that affects you? Or is it D, the quality of your social relationships? Now, if you kind of caught on to where we're going with this, you know that the answer to that is D, the quality of your social relationships is the single biggest predictor regarding a person's overall quality of life. There are people within the world of sociology and neuroscience and these really smart people who have researched. And what they found is that you can take all these variables, things like how much money you have and what your job is and do you find meaning from your work and where you live and the climate and all those things. And while those are important indicators, they're not the primary predictor. The primary predictor for the quality of life that you have isn't any of those things. It's actually the quality of your social relationships. And if you think about it, this makes sense. If you look at life through a biblical lens, if you look at this world around us through a biblical worldview, you find that from the very beginning, God gave these things that we know as the Ten Commandments. We find them a couple different places in the Old Testament. But you might not have ever thought about this, that the first four of the Ten Commandments have to do with our relationship with God. So they're kind of this vertical relationship. We're not to make any false idols, take God's name in vain, honor the Sabbath, etc. So four of the commandments have to do with our relationship with God, which leads to, do you know what the next six have to do with? The next six of God's Ten Commandments, the majority of the Ten Commandments, don't have to do with our relationship with God. They have to do with our relationship with people. We look at the commandments that God has given us. Honor your father and mother. Don't murder. Don't commit adultery, steal, bear false witness, covet your neighbor's house, etc. It makes sense that God values person-to-person relationships because he is the one who has created them. John writes this way in the New Testament, 1 John 4:20. He says this: whoever claims to love God, so I've got a great relationship with God, I'm very spiritual, passionate about God, yet hates his brother, is a liar. For whoever does not love their brother whom they have seen cannot love God whom they have not seen. The thing I want to point out from the very beginning of this series is that to grow spiritually, you must grow relationally. Here's what we often tend to do within the church, and if you're not from the church or have a church background, you probably still tend to do this. We tend to think that we can compartmentalize. We can say, well, I've got my relationship with Jesus over here and things are solid and I'm spiritual and I have a good prayer life. And then on the other side, I've got this other compartment, this other category, and this is my relationship with other people. And we tend to think that we can have a great relationship with Jesus even though we may have crummy relationships with people. And what I think the scriptures would call us to see from the very beginning is there is a connection between our relationship with God and our relationship with people. That if in our relationships with people, we are stunted. If there's a lid, if there's something that is not right in our relationships with people, it's going to have a direct impact on our relationship with God. So I say that just to say this. If you're here and you've been a follower for 30 or 40 years and you want to grow in your relationship with Jesus, well, you have to grow in your relationship with the people around you. But also if you're here and you say, well, I want to know who Jesus is and what his life is that he calls me to, well, you need to know that the relationships that God has placed around you are significant and influence the relationship that you have with Jesus. And so what we're going to do this morning is we're going to dive into the words of Jesus beginning in Matthew chapter 5, and we're going to focus on this topic: how do we respond and what do we do when we have issues with other people or other people have issues with us? So turn with me to Matthew chapter 5. We're going to begin at verse 21. We're going to go through verse 26. And really the question we're asking And what do we do? How do we respond when somebody has a problem with us, when we have a problem with somebody else? And can we just go ahead and from the beginning, can you just do this with me? Take your church mask, your church face, just take it off for a few moments. Because when we come to church, we want to pretend that everything is well, everything is good. I'm just telling you, as your pastor, I know better. I know that you have issues, you have junk. If you have friends and you have family, somewhere you have conflict. Somewhere you have somebody that this past week has rubbed you the wrong way. I don't know if I shouldn't be proud to admit this, but this past week, I went to take my wife's van and get it cleaned. She was gone for a little bit, so I said, I'm going to take it in and go through the car wash. And so we went to a place where you get an oil change, and it gives you 4 free car washes. Well, one of those car washes had not been used, had not been redeemed. There was no marking that indicated it had been redeemed. It had been in my wallet the entire time since I got the first oil change and I'd gotten a couple car washes. So I go up there and I give the little receipt to the guy who's there, and he's ready to take this and send me on the way through and to mark that, okay, now this has been used. And he looks at this unused, unredeemed little portion and he says, well, this thing's already been used. I said, well, sir, the last time I was here, we had this same problem, similar problem. They had to find it in their computer. He says, well, if you want to argue with me, you can. But I'm telling you, I can't go what you say. I got to go with the computer says this thing's been used. And at this point, I'm just telling you, I'm not feeling very pastoral. I'm not thinking about like the future health and growth and maturity of my children. I'm thinking this guy is going to try to rip me off. And so I tried one other way to phrase it and to say it in such a way to kind of find common ground and get him to see that it's an $8 car wash. I'm not trying to be dishonest here. If it had been used, they would have marked it and indicated it. And I tried to say it. He said something sarcastic. And I said, you're lying. You're telling me that it's been used and it hasn't been used. And all of a sudden, it's like my kids are in the back. And I start to think, okay, I just need to pull it down. So those things happen to us all through life. What Jesus addresses here is some of that. But he's really addressing when we have issues with people that are more longstanding than that. Like at some point, I may have to go back and try to work things out with a guy there. But he's not talking about just those initial flare-ups that happen. I know you don't have them happen to you, but those initial flare-ups that happen, he's talking about these deeper-seated, deeper-rooted relational issues that we have. In Matthew chapter 5, beginning in verse 21, he says, you have heard that the ancients were told, or you have heard that it was said, you shall not commit murder, and whoever commits murder shall be liable to the court. So he said, this is the current standard that you have received, that you know of from Judaism, from the Mosaic law. This is what you know of the law. But Jesus, again, he's going to elevate the standard. He's going to show us what a true picture of authentic righteousness is. Not just the letter of the law, but the spirit of the law. So Jesus says, you've heard that it was when you have an issue with somebody, you shouldn't do these outward things like murder them. Jesus goes on verse 22 and he probes into, not just if you were here last week, the tip of the iceberg. He moves to the base. He moves to the heart. Verse 22, but I say to you that everyone who is angry. Now, where does anger reside? Anger resides inwardly. Anger resides in the base of our iceberg. Anger resides in our heart. Whoever is angry with his brother shall be guilty before the court. Whoever says to his brother, you good for nothing. You're lying to me. You good for nothing shall be guilty before the Supreme Court, the Sanhedrin, this religious ruling body. And whoever says you fool, he elevates the consequences here, shall be guilty enough to go into the fiery hell. In verse 23 says, therefore, if you're presenting your offering at the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your offering there before the altar and go. First, be reconciled to your brother, then come and present your offering. So what I want to do this morning is to look at three ways that we can respond, three ways that we can deal with our anger, our frustration. And if to that you say, well, I'm just not an angry person. I get upset. I get unhappy. Okay, let's not mince, words. Anything that causes you to think negatively of another person, anything that causes you to want negative for another person, So it could be that you try to change the way others see this individual through the things that you say about the individual. This passage applies to you. It could be that you just have an inner desire to see this person be known for who they really are. The terrible individual, the treacherous betrayer, anything that's in you that stirs, that's negative, that you say, I've got this against them and I want negative to happen in their life. That's what Jesus is addressing here. There are three ways that we can handle that and deal with that. The first is, number one, is that we can release it. We can release it. And this is the first thing that the law in Moses' day in the Old Testament was addressing. This idea that you don't want to just give vent to your anger. You don't want to go around murdering somebody. You don't want to go around, being just giving vent to your anger. But that's the first thing that we can do with it. And here's what we all can understand about when we vent, when we release our anger. There is no good redemptive story that ever begins with, I got so mad and I finally just let them have it. I got so ticked off, I got so frustrated that I finally just punched him. That I finally just said, I don't care what they think, I'm just going to let them know how I feel. To release your anger is when you just give your emotions an unrestrained just freedom that whatever you're feeling inside, you're gonna let that loose. But the thing about releasing our anger is it just ruins any potential good for restoration to happen in a relationship. And we all have relationships we can look at in the past that are filled with regret because we released our anger. I think it's for that reason James, New Testament writer, says in chapter 1, verses 19 and 20, he says, let everyone be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. For the anger of man does not bring about the righteousness of God. And so the thing to understand about anger is that anger in and of itself is not sin. That there were times when Jesus was angry. He had a righteous anger. There are times when you, if you are a caretaker, a provider, a parent, when there is a righteous anger that you may have to have when somebody comes and hurts one of your children or somebody that you're caring for, there can be righteous anger. So anger in and of itself is not sin. But we have to embrace this, that anger often leads to sin. And it's not just the act of getting angry, having this emotional response to something that's done to us or somebody we love. It's what we do with it once it comes into our heart. So anger can be a normal, a natural response to when somebody hurts us, betrays us, wrongs us, disappoints us, etc. And what Jesus is talking about here is not just that we have anger, but it's what we do with that anger that's most significant. It's interesting, in some of the early manuscripts, the Greek manuscripts, the writers, it looks as if later on, they added a word to this verse, the word ike. And it literally means just without fault. And so the way it would be translated, if you looked at through the lens of how some writers added to and wrote later, is they translated in verse 23, he says, therefore, if you're presenting your offering at the altar and remember that your brother has something against you, and the idea there is that something against you, that's without cause, that's not a significant, important, essential thing. Essentially, what they were doing is trying to downplay the significance and responsibility of the person in that occasion. So Jesus, what he's saying here is essentially you can release the anger. That's one option, which he would call us to not do. The second is this: you can try to restrain your anger. You can restrain your anger. This is where you say, well, I'm not going to murder. I'm not going to call somebody a fool. I'm not going to call somebody names. You can hold it in. But if you see what Jesus is doing here in these verses, he's saying that it's not enough for you just to not go around murdering in verse 21. He's saying there's something deeper there in verses 22 and following that has to do not just with the symptom of anger, but with the source of anger. So this is so important to grasp. Jesus here in these verses is not just addressing the outward ability to restrain yourself in a contentious situation. He's not just addressing the symptom of anger, what you do with how you feel. He's addressing the source of it. And so you can say, well, I'll just restrain my anger. I won't fuss. I won't complain. I won't hit. I won't lash out. But Jesus wants something deeper for us here. He wants for us not just to experience the ability and have the ability to restrain the outward symptom. He wants us to be healed of the source. Because you can restrain the symptom, but if you're going to get to the source, that's something that has to be healed. Which leads us to Jesus' words in verses 23 through 26. And this is the third option, the third way that you can deal with your anger. And that is that you can reconcile it. So the first option is to release it. Just let the person have it. The second is to restrain it. To be a good moral Christian and not tell the person off. To restrain what you want to do, which addresses the symptom but doesn't get to the source. And what Jesus said is you need to get to the heart of the matter and seek reconciliation. Verses 23 through 26. He says, therefore, if you're presenting your offering at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, not that you have something against your brother. Your brother has something against you. Leave your offering there before the altar and go first be reconciled to your brother and then come and present your offering to God. And so this is the heart of Jesus here is to reconcile. To see that the inner heart, the source, your inner being, the base of the iceberg experiences healing and freedom. So we don't walk around just trying to white-knuckle it. We don't walk around with bitterness in our heart, frustration in our heart, anger in our heart, saying, well, I'm just not going to tell them what they really need to know. We're not just restraining or releasing. We're reconciling. And the central truth today is just simply this, that the remedy to anger, this desire to have negative things happen to this other person, the remedy to anger is reconciliation. It's not release or restraint. And so this leads to just the application which Jesus gives in verses 23 through 26. The first is this, is to simply pause in your worship with God. And the second is to pursue reconciliation with people. So the application that Jesus gives in these verses is incredibly clear. If you find that somebody else has something against you, you have something against somebody else, the first thing that you need to do before you focus on the spiritual worship of God, leaving your offering there at the altar, is to first pause with your worship with God, and then it's to pursue reconciliation with people. We've said before, and I say again, that if you want to obtain the life that Jesus offers, if you want to kind of experience this abundant life that Jesus offers to us, if you want to obtain the life Jesus offers, you have to obey the laws that Jesus gives. And so if you want to begin walking in greater abundance in your relationships, you have to stop and say, okay, Jesus doesn't want me to release it and just let my anger be known. He doesn't want me just to restrain it, to focus on the symptom. He wants me to reconcile, to see that there is healing that takes place at a deeper place in my heart. He wants me to experience inner freedom. He wants me to see that there is reconciliation that takes place. If you want to live the life that Jesus offers, walk in the abundance that Jesus offers, we have to walk in obedience because an obedient life is the pathway to an abundant life. And right now is really where the rubber meets the road. Right now is a decisive moment for you if you're at a place where you think of, okay, yeah, I know I had this issue with this person and there's this thing going on right now. I mean, whatever the challenge or struggle you're having in relation with somebody, this is the decisive moment where you can either choose to say, I'm going to live life Jesus's way, or I'm going to continue living life the way that I want to live. It's that simple. This is not a real gray area. It's pretty black and white in terms of what Jesus calls us to do. So what I would lay out before you as the one presenting the words of Jesus here is that if you want to walk in the kingdom, having an abundant life, being blessed the way Jesus wants to bless you, you have to walk in obedience to what he calls you to do. And so this is the application, to simply pause in your worship with God and pursue reconciliation with people. This is something that doesn't take 3 weeks for you to decide you're going to be obedient to it. It doesn't have to take God making you miserable. It doesn't have to take God creating this storm in your life. It simply requires you today hearing the voice of Jesus afresh for your life, knowing that this is His will, and saying, Jesus, I want to walk in this. And you deciding consciously, even as I speak right now, you're agreeing with the Lord and you're saying, okay, I am this afternoon going to take your words to heart and live them out. There is somebody who has frustrated me. There is somebody who has hurt me. There's somebody who said something about me, about my family, about my kids. It has really bothered me, but I'm not just going to let this thing lay any longer. I'm actually going to try to address this issue. I'm going to try to see that there's reconciliation that takes place. And so I know that saying that, this is a lot easier to preach than it is to live. Because already as I'm talking, there are probably a lot of you who you formulated objections in your mind. Is that true? You said, yes, but. Okay, I understand that that's what Jesus says, but you don't really understand my particular situation. So let me go ahead and help you. And I'm going to speak to some objections that you might have formulated in your mind as I've been talking. The first objection is this. What if the other person won't reconcile? That's a legitimate potential. If you go to another person, perhaps you've gone to another person, they've been hard-hearted, they've been closed off, they've not been willing to reconcile. The thing I would say to you is this, that reconciliation takes two. You can't reconcile with somebody who refuses to reconcile with you. It's just, it's impossible because it requires two people. You can be responsible for yourself. You cannot be responsible for another person. We are responsible to people, not for people. There's a big difference in our relationships with people. So reconciliation does take two. I think that's a valid objection. But here's what I would want you to understand, that though reconciliation takes two, forgiveness takes one. So it may be that you have a person in your life, you have tried every which way you know how to make things right. You have tried to reconcile and they resist. Well, you can't be reconciled to them because that takes two, but to forgive them, that only takes you. That only takes one. I made note here today that reconciliation, it requires forgiveness, but forgiveness does not require reconciliation. Catch that? So if you're going to be reconciled with somebody, generally, there's going to have to be forgiveness extended. You're going to have to let them go from the wrong that they've done. But in order for you to forgive somebody of the wrong that they've done to you, reconciliation is not necessary for that. You can forgive them, even though reconciliation has not yet taken place. And what this will do for you is it will free you. My burden for you this morning is you may have lived for years with anxiety in your heart, with a burden in your heart, with bitterness in your heart, with just this toxic sense of just longing negative for another person. And if you had that this morning, then freedom is the way to release that. And so if you say, well, if the other person won't reconcile, it may be that you can't reconcile, but you can still forgive. Another objection you may give is this. Well, what if the other person keeps wronging or offending me or hurting me? What if they are a perpetual hurter? I would phrase it like this, that if you're dealing with somebody who does have a pattern of being toxic and hurtful and negative towards you or your family, you can try to right the relationship. You can try to right the wrong. Just don't feel as if you have to repeat the wrong. So right it, don't repeat it. You try to make things right, set things right, but don't feel as if you have to put yourself in the same position for them to do the very same thing to you or to other people that you love again. Jesus gave us a brain for a reason. He gave us common sense for a reason. Not so that we could continue placing ourselves into relational environments that are toxic and unhealthy and say, well, I've just got to take this for the glory of Jesus. That's not necessarily the case. There are some relationships and some people where you just need to know this is where they are, this is where you are, and you need to establish a healthy boundary between those two. So you try to make things right, but you don't have to put yourself back in the same situation to allow it to continue over and over again. And I just hope that frees you a little bit. Another objection you may give, I know it sounds like you're very unspiritual coming up with all these objections, right? Another objection you may give is you say, well, it wasn't my fault. I was not the one in the wrong in this relationship. Has anybody ever experienced that? It's not really your fault. It's their fault. Listen, it wasn't Jesus' fault that you sinned against him, right? But yet, Jesus came to us, even when it wasn't his fault, even when he was not in the wrong, he came to us to reconcile, to make things right. Reconciliation, a desire to make things right with other people, is ultimately an issue of stewardship. Because if you have received the grace of God, so that means that Jesus has come for you and he's done something for you that you did not deserve. He's been gracious to you. You've received the grace of Jesus into your life. Then you are now a steward of what Jesus has done for you. And so you take the same grace that you have received and you freely give that grace to others. And reconciling with another person, being willing to go to the other person, is an incredible opportunity to say, okay, you have given me grace, Jesus. Now I'm going to extend that to another person. The last thing you may say was, why should I do this for somebody else when they haven't done anything for me? Now, why should I even try? Why should I even do this? The simple reason is, again, because Jesus did something for you when you hadn't done anything for him. In fact, Jesus did something for you when you had done something to him. One of the best questions to ask yourself to determine whether or not you're growing in your relational maturity and your spiritual maturity is this question here. Will you do something for someone who has done something to you? Now, I'll be honest, there's nothing in my flesh that wants to do something for somebody who has done something to me. Everything in my flesh would want to do something to somebody that has done something to me. So if they have wronged me, what I want to do is wrong them. Jesus, and the life Jesus models for us is to be willing to extend the kind of grace to others that has been extended to us so that we are willing to do something for the people who have done something to us. If you begin doing that and you begin seeking to exercise grace, you begin to seek to make things right, you seek to see things restored, people will look at that and they will say, there's something strange. There's something otherworldly about you. Because you're operating with a different compass. You're operating not as the world operates. You're operating in a way that is different than anything that I have ever seen. But yet I believe that this is the path of healing. This is the way that we have the source, not just the symptom, healed by the grace of God in our lives. And so the big picture is when we do this, we live out the vision that Jesus paints for us of life in his kingdom. And the end goal that God has for each person is wholeness, is restoration, is healing. You take the words of Jesus to heart. You consider the grace that he's extended to you. You genuinely seek to be obedient to Jesus. It may not be that every relationship that you have that there's a struggle or is an issue, that relationship is going to get better. But here's what will get better 10 times out of 10. You. Your heart. Your inner being. You can't change somebody else. You can't be responsible for how somebody else responds. But you can be responsible for yourself. And so I think what Jesus lays out for us is a better way of doing relationships. It's a better way of working through conflict. It's a better way of dealing with the people who oftentimes they are just, they're wrong, they're silly, they're whatever word we choose. It's reconciliation. Not just releasing anger, not just restraining it, but seeing that there is healing that takes place at the source, not just the symptom. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for Jesus. I thank you for his words to us. And I just thank you for the way that you speak. And I pray that as you have you've spoken and you have opened up our minds and our hearts, that each of us, we think about the relationships that are struggling, Something about relationships in my own life that they just need reconciliation. They need healing. I pray that you would allow me, and I pray this for every person here, that you'd work in our heart in such a way that we would seek reconciliation. And when that can't happen, we would be willing to extend forgiveness. We would just let the person go from the wrong that they have done to us. I pray this together. In the name of Jesus, amen.